I still recall that memory vaguely, that they were out to get us, because I knew I was right. Now, fortunately, of course, the medication wore off in about an hour, and I was back to normal, whatever normal is, when you're in hospital for a month. I have ample experience with mental illness. My family of origin is a long line of what would politely be called eccentric people. My great-grandfather on my father's side was a famous artist named Arthur Deal, who abruptly left England after his wife abruptly died and started a new life in this country. His art is still very much in demand on eBay. He was brilliant, but a narcissist and an alcoholic. His grandson, my father, was very similar to him. My mother had bipolar disorder and suffered from various forms of mental illness all of her life. The last four generations of males in my family have all been alcoholics. It's a bit of an irony that I am named after the family psychiatrist. Go figure. Dr. Leo Alexander. He did much pioneering work in neurology and wrote part of the Nuremberg Code, as he was the one who did the analysis of the Nazi leadership. I know now that I have suffered from chronic depression much of my life. I was an alcoholic until June 14, 2003, and I'm in recovery from alcoholism. I also have to be mindful of other addictive tendencies that run in me and my family. Therapy has been tremendously helpful, and medication even more so. After I had my accident in Woodinville in 2003, I decided to go on antidepressants, and they have helped me enormously to this day. I had resisted using them for much of my life because I was afraid that I would lose my creative edge. That didn't happen. Mostly, it was calming down, stepping back, and looking at the world in a different way and through the cycles of deep depression and occasional uplifted joy. Now, there are a lot of different definitions of mental illness. Deborah sent one to me from the SAMHSA, from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. I'm not going to read the whole definition because it takes on a page and a half. But this is a shorter version. Mental disorders involve changes in thinking, mood, or behavior. These disorders can affect how we relate to others and make choices. Mental disorders take many different forms, with some rooted in deep levels of anxiety, extreme changes in mood, or the reduced ability to focus or behave appropriately. So this morning I want to talk about mental illness, but with a caveat. And I mentioned this a few minutes ago. I think most, if not all, human beings suffer from varying degrees of mental and emotional instability and illness over the course of our lives. The Kim Foundation is a nonprofit organization in Nebraska that provides education and support for the mentally ill and their families. Here's one statistic from their website about the frequency of mental illness in America. An estimated 26.2% of Americans ages 18 or over, or about 1 in 4 adults, suffer from a diagnosable mental disorder in a given year. And that doesn't even count the ones that are not discernible. So when applied to the U.S. Census, this indicates that 57.7 million people in any given year have a diagnosable mental illness. Now, last week I talked about anxiety as a place of mental and emotional fragility for us, especially this year. Other statistics from the foundation say that 18% of Americans in any given year have some form of diagnostic anxiety disorder. PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, affects at least 8 million people. Bipolar disorder, depression, and other mood disorders count for another 15. Now, statistics are dry, unless you're a statistician. So I'm going to try this a different way. You can answer this question or not with a raised hand. Either hand is fine. Although if you do your left hand, that tells something about us. How many here have been affected directly or indirectly? Yourselves, your friends, your relations, your family, workers, others. How many of you have been effectively or directly or indirectly been affected by mental illness in the course of your life? Raise your hand, please. Yeah. I think that this is universal in the human condition. Whenever I ask this question, almost every hand in the room goes up. Mental illness is not just widespread in our society, but probably affects us all in one time or another. It can destroy or affect or damage our relationships, our jobs, our ability to work and relate to other human beings. Now, Barbara Cornell is one of my colleagues here in this area, and she did, if I remember correctly, a really great service here last summer about mental illness. And I have access to her sermon if you'd ever like to see a copy. And she talked about ways that Unitarian Universalists can look at what mental illness means to us and how to face it, because as one of the topics that I'm talking about the next few weeks, we don't talk about this on Sundays, generally. It's not something we easily go to and say, let's next Sunday talk about mental illness just for fun. It's not the way we do it. And what Barbara said was, contrary to how we treat people with physical illnesses like cancer or diabetes or broken legs, we tend to want to shy away because we're not quite sure how to be with someone who is, quote, mentally ill, unquote. So how do we respond in compassionate ways rather than avoidance? Well, she had several suggestions. I'm going to mention them briefly. One, the most important for Barbara, was education. Education about mental health is an important first step in looking at those myths that go along with mental illness. And what are they? Well, one of them, and I have this with addiction as well, is that somehow mental illness is a moral failing. We have been bad people if we are mentally ill. Another one is the just get over it belief. Now, depression, for example. How often do we experience or know of instances where people have a death in the family, it's a tragic situation, and then, as it used to be in Maine where I grew up, it was, oh, get over it. You'll be fine. You've mourned for 5 days. Now it's time to get on with your life. And that is a myth of being able to turn a switch on or off in our mind to be able to say, okay, I'm done with mourning. I'm done with depression. Let's move. So reality, the education, is creating a reality of understanding about what our emotional ups and downs and challenges can be in our lives. A second way Barbara suggested was to welcome those who are mentally ill into our congregations in a spirit of love and compassion and welcome. And that's one of the great strides that has been made in the last 20 or 30 years in congregations, and I suspect this one as well. Now, there's a challenge in that. Our congregations are not professional mental health communities. So our work is to create safe spaces for those who suffer from mental health challenges. And we're still working on that. That is one of our great challenges, especially as we are aging population and we're living in a world that grows ever more anxious. The third one was simply to become advocates for the mentally ill and their families in the larger world. And I know that you have done that to support organizations to help the mentally ill and their families here in King County. There's another component, there's another group here, and that is the homeless. I've noted elsewhere that the homeless in America are refugees in their own country. We think of refugees as people coming in from, say, Mexico or Central America, or the people who are trying to make their way across the Mediterranean. We have refugees in this country who have no home. And mental illness, which affects many of them, makes it even harder to be on the streets of America, not to mention the occasional connection with the police, who may not be able to be trained in how to work with people who are mentally ill. So what does this mean for us today, January 2017? I'm not a mental health expert, so I'm not giving advice. Barbara gave excellent suggestions last summer, and we have many people here at Westside who devote their professional lives to social work, health programs, and therapy. They are all far more articulate than I could be. I'm going to shortly conclude my comments with a meditation, but here are two ways that we might practice what Barbara and others have suggested as active compassion for those who have mental health challenges. The first one is to find an alternative terms to the health to the term mental illness. Not all mental illness is destructive. Abraham Lincoln, for example, suffered from what was called in those days melancholia, which was the term we now use as depression. Steve Jobs was very likely on the autism spectrum and had extremely poor social skills throughout his life. Dr. Martin Luther King, whose day we honor on Monday, suffered from depression much of his life. Many, and perhaps all of us here in this room, have suffered from mental health issues in our lives. And I was thinking earlier, what am I saying there? And I told Michael, I said, you know, do we think that high school was a place where you could have good mental health? I don't think so. I do not think that high school is a place where mental health is a norm. I could be wrong. It could have been just me, but I suspect so. Various alternatives to mental illness have been tried over the years. The most common and most derogatory term is crazy. You are crazy. Now, interestingly enough, when I was growing up in Maine, I didn't hear that term, ever. The three that I did hear were crackpot, which interestingly enough, because I had to look it up, it doesn't mean cracked pot as in a bowl. In the 16th century, pot meant head. So a person who has a cracked head. The other term that I kept hearing was someone who was touched. In New England, that could mean almost anything. The third term, the politest term for mental illness, was eccentric. And I know nobody here is eccentric. But that was one of the terms very politely used for people who were just a little strange. Mostly my entire family, by the way. And the other term that I've heard more recently is mental disability. Well, personally, I think the best alternative wording to mental illness might be human. Human. Because if we all suffer from times in our lives when we emotionally or mentally just did not have it in clarity, We're all part of it. So here's a second practice we might consider. If every one of us has suffered from mental health challenges in our lives, then that means that every one of us has the potential to relate to and empathize and be compassionate with, not to, but with people who are suffering from mental health issues. We are them, they are us. So here's a final example, and I tend to take my life as an example sometimes because it gets down to the personal. 2 weeks ago, I had to go to North Carolina on short notice after my aunt's husband, my uncle, died. A day or so later, after I went there, I took my 92-year-old aunt, her daughter, and grandson out to eat at a local restaurant. Now, my Aunt Betsy is the last of that generation of people in my life, in my family. She wasn't part of my childhood, but we grew close over the years as I became an adult and I grew older. She was sitting to my left at the restaurant, and we were all chatting while the food was arriving. And Betsy, my aunt, looked at me suddenly and she said, "Are we related? Are we related?" I quickly looked across the table at her daughter and grandson, and they very carefully kept their faces very neutral. And Betsy's words broke my heart. I assured her that indeed we were related, as I was her brother's son. A few minutes later, she again turned to me and apologized for her forgetfulness. And so I took her by the hand and said, "You are remembering what is important right now. All these memories of being my aunt are still there in your mind. What's important right now is that we are together." I don't think I would have known how to respond to her early stage dementia earlier in my life. My memory of the hospital, of being at Harborview for over a month, of having to learn how to ask for help, of being around people in all stages of their life journey, all of my confusion in the hospital after that surgery helped me learn to empathize with another human being rather than pull away or avoid answering her question. They are us, we are them. And as the opening words said, all are welcome. All are welcome if we are steady and composed, and all are welcome if we feel completely lost, and all are welcome if we don't know what we're feeling. All are welcome here. We matter, and we are loved. So let's take a short meditation time, just some quiet time. Think about those words. No matter where we are in our lives, no matter what we're feeling, what our fears might be, our confusion, we are welcome. No matter what our story is, we are welcome. No matter how confusing life can be, we are welcome. No matter if we are in tears and afraid of what tomorrow may bring, we are welcome in this sanctuary.